Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening. As always, go to reallifepharmacology.com, snag your free 31-page PDF, a great study guide on the top 200 drugs, where I relay important information that's going to come up on board exams, like it has come up in board exams throughout my career. As well as clinical practice pearls and things that actually come up in real life. So definitely go check that out. It's a 31-page PDF, absolutely for free. No cost to you, simply for subscribing and following the podcast, and we'll let you know when we've got new content available. So go check that out, reallifepharmacology.com. All right, the drug of the day today is quetiapine. Brand name of this medication is Seroquel. It is definitely a medication that I see used in clinical practice a fair amount, particularly in my geriatric population, where we've got psychosis associated with dementia and those type of cognitive disorders. It is classified as an antipsychotic, of course. So mechanistically, it's going to block dopamine receptors, specifically D2. It also has some serotonin type 2 receptor blockade or antagonism as well there. But again, being in that class of antipsychotics, we're typically going to think of dopamine blockade as kind of the primary mechanism. In addition, it does have other activity as well from a mechanism of action standpoint. So we've got some alpha blocking activity potentially, as well as antihistamine, kind of slash anticholinergic type activity as well. And as we talk about adverse effects, you're going to see why some of those kind of sub mechanisms may impact patient care and the risk for adverse effects. Now, uses of this medication, certainly schizophrenia, bipolar disorder with associated mania, that type of thing, miscellaneous kind of psychotic disorders, Parkinson's type disease with psychosis associated with that. Off-label, you may see OCD, augmentation for PTSD, depression. So there's definitely lots of different psych purposes I've seen it used for. Again, in my practice, most often I'm going to see this medication started for those delusional, psychotic-type behaviors in patients with dementia. And, of course, from an adverse effect profile and a boxed warning profile, there is an increased risk of mortality, and that boxed warning is associated with quetiapine, as well as all the other antipsychotics. So again, that boxed warning, increased risk of mortality in elderly dementia patients. So important to think about that. And if you're ever going to use an antipsychotic in a dementia patient, that warning weighs heavily. And that's why we try to avoid antipsychotics in that patient population, if at all possible. From a class perspective with antipsychotics, so you've got your extrapyramidal symptoms, so those movement-type side effects, metabolic syndrome, anticholinergic activity, QTC prolongation, sexual dysfunction, hyperprolactinemia, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, sedation, falls, and potentially a drop in blood pressure as well, but that's an overwhelming list to think about. And with quetiapine, it's important to recognize that antipsychotics kind of have varying degrees of how much they cause those adverse effects. And obviously, a lot of those adverse effects are dose-dependent as well. The higher you escalate the dose, the more and more likely you're going to run into some of these adverse effects that I just rambled through there. So three important points that I want to pull out with quetiapine. So metabolic syndrome, it's not that great as far as metabolic syndrome risk goes. It's kind of middle of the pack I would say it's not as bad as like a olanzapine or a clozapine, but it's not as good as a drug like aripiprazole that's in the antipsychotic class there. Extrapyramidal symptoms, definitely better than most as far as that goes. So this is a drug, quetiapine, that you classically see in a patient with Parkinson's disorder and they're having psychosis-type issues. Now, we're going to do other things to address that psychosis besides just add an antipsychotic. We're going to look at dosing of, you know, Sinemet if they're on that and some other things there. But quetiapine, of many of the other antipsychotics, carries a little bit lower risk of exacerbating some of those movement disorders. So remember in Parkinson's, we try to supplement with dopamine, and remember antipsychotics try to block that dopamine. So it's kind of this, you know, beneficial opposition type effect, this kind of back and forth interplay with dopamine that can get sometimes very, very challenging to figure out in a Parkinson's patient who also has psychosis associated with their Parkinson's disease. So metabolic syndrome, kind of middle of the road, that's an important thing to remember, I think, in practice. Parkinson's disease, Parkinson's psychosis, lower risk at exacerbating some of those movement disorders compared to other antipsychotics like risperidone, for example, would be a higher risk agent there. And sedation, quetiapine tends to be more on the sedating side of things. So where I've seen that utilized is patients that have a lot of difficulties with psychosis issues at night. Maybe they're having hallucinations, delusions, and it's more so in the evening hours. You may see quetiapine utilized for that because it may tend to be a little bit more sedating than some of the other antipsychotics, or it's on the higher end anyway. So those are kind of some clinical quirks and pearls in situations where you may see quetiapine used compared to some of the other antipsychotics. And again, kind of going back to metabolic syndrome, that's something we generally worry more about in a patient, you know, a 20-plus-something-year-old schizophrenic. We're going to worry more about development of diabetes and hyperlipidemia than we are in a, you know, 85-year-old that we're using it for dementia-related psychosis. So, again, these adverse effects and these things can kind of have different points of emphasis based upon the age of the patient. Now, thinking about that elderly patient, sedation and fall risk, that's going to probably be a lot higher on our radar. That may impact the patient and cause them more immediate harm than something like metabolic syndrome. So, again, just kind of thinking about your patients clinically and what's important to them in that situation and what adverse effects we're trying to avoid or minimize versus other adverse effects that, you know, probably aren't as big a deal. All right, wrapping up here, I wanted to touch on kinetics a little bit. Remember that with kinetics, 3A4 is a pathway of breakdown for quetiapine. So as you're going to see in the drug interaction section, that is important to think about a little bit anyway. And then, of course, I wanted to mention absorption as well. So with larger food intakes, absorption can increase in the neighborhood of, you know, 15 to 25%. And that's AUC, or area under the curve. So essentially the exposure, systemic exposure to the drug, can increase 15 to 25% in that ballpark based upon a larger meal or a high-fat meal. That may go up a little bit further even. So with that said, the way I think about this clinically is it's usually not a big deal in my mind, 15 to 25%. Where I do get a little bit more worried is if patients kind of change the way they take it. And so if I encounter a patient that's maybe experiencing quetiapine adverse effects or potentially quetiapine adverse effects, and their dose has been overall pretty stable over the last year or two, for example, that's a situation where I'm going to maybe dig into that and say, hey, have you changed the way you take it? You know, do you now take it with food? And before you didn't take it with food? That's kind of an example of where I would maybe get a little bit more worried about the absorption and the way a patient is taking that. So if it's a new start and we're titrating the dose, it's not a huge deal, but I would probably just encourage consistency and just continuing to take it in the same way at the same time every day, depending upon, you know, how we're dosing it and that type of thing, because it might be dosed two or three times a day, depending upon the product you're using versus immediate release versus extended release. But I think just that consistency is probably the most important education point to kind of emphasize with your patients there. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like pharmacotherapy, ambulatory care, geriatrics exam, psychiatric exam, BCMTMS, or you're a student taking the NAPLEX soon, definitely go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. We've got links to all of our content in your preparation for those board exams. In addition, if you're a nurse practitioner, dietitian, med student, physician, we've got all sorts of case studies, clinical pearls on various topics. So my latest book, Perils of Polypharmacy, I go through lots of case scenarios of polypharmacy patients and basically help break them down, help educate about some of the challenges and struggles that we deal with when it comes to polypharmacy. So great little book, great read. I think you'll find a lot of the information in there is really relevant and things that you actually see in clinical practice, because I developed it based upon things that I've actually seen throughout my years of experience as a clinical pharmacist. So again, all those links, everything I've got there, meded101.com/store, STORE. And obviously your support there helps grow this podcast and help keeps it free for all those to benefit from. All right, so let's finish up on drug interactions. So first, when I think of drug interactions and antipsychotics, I usually think of additive effects. So sedation is an issue with quetiapine. If we add it on to other sedating medications, alcohol, opioids, benzodiazepines, you name it, that sedation can really ramp up and potentially slam a patient. So important to remember that. QT prolongation, same thing, kind of an additive type of thing. If you've got a patient on antiarrhythmics, you know, classic example being amiodarone. If you've got them on quinolone antibiotics, if you've got them on other antipsychotics, if you've got them on dancitron is another example. These can all have kind of cumulative additive effects for QT prolongation. So important to think about that, important to monitor that. And obviously, that risk increases as we add on more and more meds that can cause that risk. Lower blood pressure. So I mentioned quetiapine has some alpha blocking activity potentially. So that, you know, might be one of the reasons mechanistically why it can cause some hypotension sometime. So definitely think about that additive effect. If you've got a borderline patient, that borderline low blood pressure patient that's at risk for falls, quetiapine could potentially add on to that for sure. And also mechanistically, I mentioned potential antihistamine, anticholinergic burden. That can play a role in adding on to the anticholinergic burden of other medications. So, you know, your oxybutynins, your older antihistamines like your diphenhydramines, these can all kind of have a cumulative effect together and potentially put your patient more at risk for anticholinergic type effects. And then lastly, it is metabolized, at least in part, by CYP3A4, so there is some potential there for drug interaction. So your classic enzyme inducers, like your St. John's wort, carbamazepine, those could lower concentrations of quetiapine, while inhibitors would have the potential to mildly increase concentrations of quetiapine. So I think that wraps up my highlights on quetiapine. I hope you found this podcast beneficial. Please leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. I'm greatly appreciative to those of you who have already done that. Also, share us with colleagues, friends, students that you're precepting, other healthcare professions that may need some more education on medications. Please email links, share, do whatever you can to kind of help grow that. This podcast, I'm greatly appreciative to those of you who have done that and have told me about it. Really, really thankful and humbled by the number of people who have found some help and guidance with this podcast. So greatly appreciative to all of you who have helped share the podcast and certainly grow the audience. If you enjoy the content here, certainly you're going to benefit and enjoy a lot of the content at meded101.com/store. So go support our sponsor, help keep this podcast free for others to benefit from. And if you want to track me down, comments, suggestions, mededucation101@gmail.com or LinkedIn is probably the best social media network to track me down at. So with that said, I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you found this helpful, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.